Welcome to Marvelous Disney, the podcast that discusses the most recent doings at one of the more dynamic divisions of the Walt Disney Company, which is, of course, Marvel Entertainment. This is entertainment writer Jim Hill, and my co-host, the amazing Aaron Adams, and I are recording this week's episode on Wednesday, May 11th, 2022. By the way, the show will debut online on Friday, May 13th. Friday the 13th, traditionally associated with bad luck or men with coveralls who wear hockey masks. And machetes, you know. And as long as we're talking about horror films, Doctor Strange in the Multiverse of Madness is kind of a horror film.
It's a touch on the spooky side. I'll tell you what, without jumping into any of my review stuff, I did see a bunch of kids in the theater when I went to go see it, and I did not hear any squeals of horror or dismay or any kids running out to use the emergency restroom type situation. None of that.
Okay.
And there were no tears when I saw it. And these are like, you know, between 6 and 10-year-old kids. Mm-hmm. I mean, still on the young side. And no one seemed to be scarred on the backside of Doctor Strange. So maybe a touch on the spooky side, but a whole lot of fun, and we'll get into more of it later on in the show.
Very true. Very true. Speaking of which, Multiverse of Madness opened domestically with $187.4 million in ticket sales, making it the 11th largest opening of all time and the second biggest opening of the pandemic era. That said, I want to remind folks that on last week's show, Aaron and I were talking about how industry insiders were projecting that Multiverse of Madness would sell between $175 to $200 million worth of tickets in North America. Aaron, if you break out your calculator, $187.4 million is that number, give or take $100,000. That's the exact number between $175 and $200 million, which is a scarily accurate box office prediction.
Harvey in the betting pool won that prediction, and he takes home $100. Good job, Harvey.
There we go.
Good guess.
There we go. All right, so it's biggest film so far of 2022. This Sam Raimi film just came charging along at the domestic box office after its opening weekend. Blew by the $200 million ticket sale barrier, I want to say, on Monday. And by the way, just today, the film made worldwide, if you combine domestic and international ticket sales, It's $500 million. So a huge, huge hit, which we will talk at length about the Sam Raimi film on the second half of today's show. But first, the news. And as always, the news portion of today's show is brought to you by Storybook Destinations, trusted travel partner of the Jim Hill Media Podcast Network. For a worry-free travel experience, please book online at storybookdestinations.com. All right. Want to take a few moments here to circle back on Moon Knight. Disney Plus evidently is very pleased with Moon Knight's viewership.
Yay! I was worried about it. I just want to make sure that we get more Moon Knight in our MCU, and I hope that it didn't fail. And you know, people were chatting about it online. It seemed like it had a good buzz, but you don't know what the numbers are until the company actually says it did good or it did bad.
That's
right?
The weirdest part about these shows on a streaming service. It's, first of all, it's viewership, not ratings. And then you have to deal with these metrics. Like, you know, the reason that Disney is pleased with Moon Knight is because it did 8.65 times more in demand than the average show that's being streamed. Certainly from a viewership position, Moon Knight did better than Loki or Hawkeye, but still lagged behind WandaVision and Falcon and the Winter Soldier, literally in the middle of the pack when it comes to the MCU limited series to date.
Hey, for a character debut, that's not bad.
No.
You know, those other characters had history in the MCU. This is the first time that we've got a glimpse at Moon Knight. So I think that's a very good spot to be in on your first outing.
I agree.
Yeah.
And by the way, Disney did its earnings call earlier today, and Disney Plus gained 7.9 million paid subscribers over the first 3 months of 2022. They now stand at 137.7 million subscribers, which is up 33% 2022 versus 2021. So again, happy folks there. One little bit of depressing news. Had they stuck to their usual schedule, you know how Disney Plus has done these assembled specials about each of the Marvel Studios limited series.
Oh, yeah, sure. Yep.
It was supposed to debut today, but for some odd reason, they kicked the can, and it's now going to pop up on the subscription service on May 25th. So mark the calendars, folks. I'm going to love to see how they handled the whole Oscar Isaacs talks to himself during that show.
Sometimes I think they could do just a touch more with their assembled. I mean, it's nice to have a little glimpse back, and not everyone is going to be as diehard as we are that want to see all the nooks and crannies of how the thing works, right? So we're a very small community to please. And honestly, that means usually not worth the time and effort. But sometimes if you have something so special like an actor who's playing against himself two or three different ways, I think you need to dedicate like a chapter of like, you know, if you're going to do two episodes, then just do one whole chapter that's just about that thing, because the work that he did, the planning that has to go into it, the tricks that you have to use to pull it off, those are all fascinating movie-making elements, and those are things that people who aspire to direct, you know, the young people that look at film and go, I want to do that. Those glimpses are priceless to them, and it gets their imagination cooking on what they could do if given a camera and a minute of time and money.
No, true. Excellent points. Speaking of behind-the-scenes aspects of Moon Knight, Jeremy Slater, the head writer on Moon Knight, is also an executive producer in this limited series, told the direct, you know, they were talking about, well, what else did you, you know, was the stuff that got cut? There was stuff that you wanted to do. And Jeremy talked about how they were looking to do a cold opening for episode 4. We were just then seeing that they were getting to Amet, you know, in the pyramid to release her. And it's like, well, how did she get bound into that statue form? And so they, what they were planning to do as a cold opening for episode 4 was this big action scene where the Eternals were supposed to have joined forces with Khonshu back in ancient Egypt as they did battle with Amet and eventually locked her away. And Slater talked about he tried really hard to get the Eternals into the show, largely because he's buddies with Kumail Nanjiani, the actor who played Kringo. And, you know, and again, as the writer, he's like, this would be a really cool way to start episode 4. But then, you know, he had his executive producer hat on and, you know, with an eye toward, you know, trying to stretch the budget of this limited series as far as it would go. And he realized, this is going to be hugely expensive to recreate ancient Egypt, not to mention bringing three or four of the actors who previously Eternals back just for this one brief action scene. So it got scrapped. What's so funny about this interview that Jeremy Slater did, he talked about Moon Knight. He goes, well, you know, there's a line in the script that I don't know if it made it into the finished movie, but it's a reference to Kang the Conqueror.
Now, is it going to be the He Who Remains character version of Kang, or is it Kang, or is it a different version of Kang?
Well,
did he say which version it was?
How familiar are you with the name Rama Tut?
Is that King Tut's Mama Tut's name, Rama Tut? I don't know.
Well, supposedly, and I can remember, you know, Kang the Conqueror is a supervillain from the 25th century who has bothered all manner of Marvel superhero by going back in time and changing key events. And supposedly there was a story at one time where Kang, in order to really impact human history, went back to ancient Egypt and installed himself as a pharaoh. And the name he used was Ramatut. This is what Jeremy says. There was a line in the script, and I don't know if it survived. I can't remember. But there was a line where I think Stephen is sort of rattling off some Egyptian history when he has locked away in his brain, and he did mention Ramatut. I don't remember if that scene or if that line is still in the show or not, but it was that small. It was him mentioning a list of famous pharaohs or something like that, but it was Nick Pepin, one of our executives at Marvel, whose idea was to slip that in as a fun Easter egg. So is anybody willing to actually go back? Because I don't know which of the six episodes this would have been in. But if anybody is going to be rewatching Moon Knight anytime soon, and could you let us know when you hear him mention Ramatut?
I think, well, in the first episode, because he was trying to teach the young girl about the mummy, and there's a point in the first episode early on where I think they have not like a chart, but like several gods displayed somehow, maybe on a poster in the gift shop or something. But he ends up rattling off some there, I do believe. But then another opportunity where that might have happened when is when they're entering the pyramid and all the gods are present.
Yep.
And he may end up rattling off a couple of names there as well. So those would be the two places I would look at first to find that answer.
Excellent suggestion. And finally, to wrap up looking or look back at Moon Knight, this is from Jeremy Slater, and he was talking about how early on they really struggled to find a villain for Moon Knight. They went back over all of the comic books, and for a time there was a character called Bushman, who is a longtime established foe of Moon Knight's. As Slater goes on, he says, Bushman was in my first couple of versions of the script for sure, and we tried several different versions of him. Ultimately, I had to make the decision to axe Bushman. I went to Marvel and said, I'm not comfortable with this. Can we take him out and talk about different versions? And they were always really supportive. And so we then looked at classic Moon Knight villains. There were a couple we talked about, Stained Glass Scarlet and Zodiac. But none of them fit the parameters of the story that we were trying to tell. So we're like, you know what? Let's just introduce a guy and we'll grab a name from, they gave me a list of every villain who ever appeared on Moon Knight or in the Moon Knight comic. And I just went through and said, Arthur Harrow, that sounds like a cool villain name. Let's go with that.
Arthur, he landed on Arthur as a cool villain name?
Well, you know, that aardvark, you can't trust him. I mean, I know, little glasses and the yellow shirt.
I know when I was in school, I was always bullied by that Arthur.
There you go. Ooh, that Arthur. All right. Yeah. Finally, obviously, you and I both really enjoyed Moon Knight, waiting to hear about season two. No word yet. What I'm being told is that Marvel and Disney Plus have now decided to hold off on officially announcing the return of Moon Knight, the series. Well, two dates. I keep hearing two specific dates. There's July 12th. That's the day that the nominees for this year's Emmy Awards get announced. And then there's September 15th. That's the day after the 74th Emmys will be presented on NBC. And we see if Oscar Isaac takes home an award or not.
When was Kevin Feige's retreat to plan out the next 10 years of Marvel?
We talked about that. Was it last week or the show before?
Yeah, I think it's already in the past, isn't it?
Yeah. So
okay. So if my main point there is that if he had a retreat, if it hadn't happened yet, I wouldn't expect them to announce anything until they have their retreat, get their ducks in a row, and figure out what they really want to do in what order and how they and then they once they know, well, we'd like to use Moon Knight in this movie here, and that movie happens to release on this date, and then now we know kind of how we want to tease that because we know how far out it is. So yeah, if they've already had their retreat, that means that they've had their talk about where they'd like to go for the next 10 years. So now it's just a matter of they know where Moon Knight's going to show up.
Okay.
They've got it planned. It's in the cards somewhere.
All right.
It's just a matter of with the world of COVID, are we ever going to stop with the movie shuffling? Are we going to settle in and keep a release date? And it's not always COVID. Sometimes stuff's just not ready to go yet.
No,
a few more minutes in the oven before it's fully baked. So that's a thing too, but when you've got so many timelines, you really got to make sure that you've planned it down to the minute.
No, I agree. And speaking of things that are fully baked, this past Friday, May 6th, Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3 officially wrapped production. Writer-director James Gunn took to social media to commemorate this somewhat sad event, tweeting that, "I love this amazing cast and crew and their beautiful, talented, and kind souls. I'm a lucky human to have them on this journey with me for nearly a decade." And Dave Bautista seemed genuinely surprised that his 10 years of working with Gunn went by so quickly. Bautista took to social media as well to say, "Haven't found the words yet. It ended so suddenly, and I was on to my next film before I could process it all. End of a journey that changed my life." And David is incredibly loyal to James. I mean, do you remember back in July of 2018 where, Disney, because of...
Let James go for a minute for a tweet, and Dave said, "I'm out of here, suckers."
No, that's it exactly. In fact, looking back on that in March of 2019, this is after Disney corporate changed its mind and opted to rehire James. Bautista admitted, "I was contractually obligated to do the third movie, but I think Marvel and Disney, if I had really stood my ground and said, I don't want to do it without James, I think they would have been decent enough to let me out of my contract." And it's like, okay, I'm glad you think that.
Yeah, they wouldn't have needed no lawyers to talk it over.
It's a handshake, pal.
Exactly, a pat on the back. Don't let the door hit you where the good Lord split you. Right on.
Yeah, but again, David's been right front about this. He was on the Ellen show and basically said, when James is done, I'm done. And speaking of done, James also tweeted out, shared a photograph of the very last camera slate that had been shot on Guardians 3. And he said, after over 100 days of shooting and over 3,000 shots, this is the slate for the final shot of Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3, presented to me by the camera crew. It was an easy shot of Rocket seated, and it took everything in me not to break down sobbing on the spot. Shooting that last shot was a reminder of the warm impermanence of life and love, and how that impermanence makes it so precious, so valuable, and is a good reason to be grateful for what I have now. He also included this great shot of the cast on a set of couches backstage. But again, James has a black belt when it comes to social media. I mean, he was very sweet, very sincere with these tweets, but couldn't leave without throwing one boat hook that, you know, we were all going to grab at and go, what? And he mentioned that, oh, by the way, in this photograph, you'll notice everybody there, all the members of the cast there, except Zoe Saldana, Gamora. And he said, my apologies. You know, I did have a photograph of Zoe I could have tweeted out, but it was her hugging an actor that we haven't announced is in the movie yet. And so...
See, now, Jim, that's the art of the tease.
There you go.
That's the little thing where you say, hey, guys, we're doing publicity, and yeah, we're filming the movie. And, you know, you got to play your cards at a certain point in the hand, right? You can't just lay them all out in the very first go. Mm-hmm. You gotta play it slow. And it gets wrapped up, and then you're putting out, oops, I almost put out the wrong picture because that was an unannounced actor, a big famous celebrity that you'll all know and love, playing one of my favorite characters in the entire universe. Yeah. But I can't tell you about it, guys. I can't tell you about it. But if you buy a ticket to my movie, you'll find out.
There you go. And now we only have to wait a year. Guardians Volume 3 comes out May 5th, 2023. And we're going to be picking at that one. Mystery actor, not announced.
Yeah, okay. Eager to find out who that is.
Yeah,
cool.
Yeah. And speaking of things I am eager to do, I am eager to talk with Aaron about Multiverse of Madness, which we will do in a moment. Okay, we already discussed how well Doctor Strange in the Multiverse of Madness did at the box office this past weekend, which was really, really well. 2022's top film to beat, right now anyway. I suspect that Jurassic World Dominion, when it arrives in theaters in 4 weeks' time on June 10th, will eventually blow by Multiverse of Madness when it comes to summertime ticket sales. I mean, all of those cameos in Doctor Strange Multiverse of Madness were a smart, smart way to put asses in seats. But will that really compare to the boxes of appeal of having the cast of Jurassic World, Chris Pratt and Bryce Dallas Howard, appearing in a dinosaur-based adventure with the cast of the original Jurassic Park movies, Sam Neill, Jeff Goldblum, and Laura Dern? You had some thoughts about this, Aaron.
I'm going to preface my thoughts by saying, overall, I really, really enjoyed the movie. So while I'm going to be critical of an idea or a concept in general, it does not take away from the film. It does, in fact, add to it. I enjoyed the moment, but it leads to a serious question of, are we going to have Fonzie jump a shark every time a Marvel movie happens right now? And the reason that I ask that specifically is the fact that when Marvel's Doctor Strange in the Multiverse of Madness actually got in theaters, I did not see that as like the number one headline on my Twitter feed. I saw John Krasinski. Mm-hmm. I saw Reed Richards. Mm-hmm. And right there, I mean, I knew something was up because I knew Doctor Strange was out. Mm-hmm. So why the hell is John Krasinski's name the number one trend? Now, what that means is that the people that went to go see the movie, that was the thing that stuck with them after they left the theater was, oh my God, I got to see Reed Richards, Fantastic Four, played by John Krasinski. And that's what they tweeted. Mm-hmm. Nobody talked about the rest of the movie. They talked about who was in the Illuminati, mm-hmm. what happened to them even. They'd have had no problem spoiling that aspect of the story either when they were on Twitter and tweeting everything out. But they didn't talk about anything else about Doctor Strange. And that's what I find upsetting, because if you take the Illuminati out of the film, it's still a perfectly fine Doctor Strange sequel. It's a really good movie. So the stunt casting wasn't necessarily required, but I will admit, sure, it was fun. It really was. Now, that I do have a problem, though, that comes up logistically in my head when I see John Krasinski showing up as Reed Richards. You know what I want to see now is Rainn Wilson as Dr. Doom. And I want them to fight, because at one time in college, Reed took his stapler and put it in a jello mold and humiliated to, like, come on now. And then when Doom gets upset, he goes, Michael, and storms off into an office and slams the door and bitches about Reed. Come on. Isn't that what you see in your head? When I saw John Krasinski as Reed, that whole scenario played out in my head as Rainn Wilson is our new Dr. Doom. But it's not. It's just what happens when you do silly cameos with no explanation. Because you got to have, I mean, in the future movies, Jim, are we going to have an unrelated character show up just to give us a preview of what's in our future? It's not like the multiverse is going to be shutting its doors anytime soon. It looks like they're leaving that wide open for the foreseeable future. So are we going to end up having cameos and guest shots of people we're not going to see in their own movie for another 3 or 4 years?
This isn't necessarily Marvel doing something new. I mean, since the original Avengers in 2012, we've had these movies where characters all show up. Avengers Age of Ultron, Captain America Civil War, Infinity Wars and Endgame.
That's a good point. That's true.
Where this got different, though, Spider-Man No Way Home, the gimmick of the three cinematic Spideys, Tobey Maguire, Andrew Garfield, and Tom Holland, all in one movie together, coupled with bringing back this rogues gallery of the best actors who had played villains in various Spider-Man movies. I mean, that was a really tempting concept. That's like, here is my money. I want to see that movie. How do you keep doing that? You know, I mean, yeah, you could do something like we just saw. You were mentioning, you know, the cameos and Sir Patrick Stewart and the like.
I mean, your focus should just be telling the best story you can about your main central character. And if you feel that you have to do stunts in the middle of it. Now, like I said, one more time, I liked it. I enjoyed it.
Yep.
It's just that I don't want it to be a crutch that they use over and over and over again of, you know, this is what the fans are responding to, therefore we have to put that in there.
Well,
suddenly does not make your movie any better. It can actually do damage to it if you're just thinking about that component. Now, one quick thing I want to toss in here about this subject is Marvel was okay with going back and bringing Andrew Garfield and Tobey Maguire back as Spider-Men, because we have an established Spider-Man currently in our universe who's got history in the MCU, right? So there's no problem doing that. They could not bring back Ion Gruffudd or Miles Teller to be Reed Richards again, because that might imply, oh, this is our MCU version of, because I mean, if you think about it, we got Black Bolt from from the Inhumans, which was, I think most Marvel fans will agree, that's the bottom of the barrel right there. And I love Anson Mount as an actor. He is the best Christopher Pike on the planet. I think he's just a tremendous actor. I just think that they needed something besides gray concrete for every set and right angles everywhere. And I mean, there were some problems there, you know, so it's not his fault.
Nope.
But to bring Black Bolt back and kind of reconnect to something that was not as popular, like the Inhumans was not very popular. You know, they're okay going back and doing that. But when it came to Fantastic Four, it's like, nope, John Krasinski, because we want them to know that we're not going backwards on the Fantastic Four casting. When the new movie comes out, if they would have had Ion Gruffudd show up, everyone would have been like, oh, that means Jessica Alba is back. And Chris Evans comes back as the Human Torch. How's that work, right? It would have caused confusion.
Yeah.
If you go with Miles Teller, it's just like, oh, okay, so we're getting that cast back. But that was the most crapped on Fox movie that, you know, Marvel movie that they had that ever came out. So they don't want to go back that direction either. So you go with John Krasinski, whereas in Spider-Man, you can go back to a Tobey Maguire or, you know, a familiar face like Andrew Garfield, and that's okay in that instance. So, I mean, it's smart what they're doing, what the message they're sending with the casting. It's not like it's the this is the biggest fault in the world that we're talking about here.
Oh, no,
I mean, we're really being nitpicky with a laser focus on a subject of, is this going to be an issue in the future? And if it is, that could be a problem. If not, well, then we're just having fun, and it was well worth the time.
Marvel's done basically the same trick inside of 6 months.
Right.
No Way Home had the sort of stunt casting. Likewise, Multiverse of Madness. And how many times can you return to this well? But that said, I have to tell you that there were other studios in town who were like, how do we do that? And let me share one quick story here about what I'm hearing out of Paramount. And by the way, you just mentioned Anson Mount and the wonderful work he's doing on the new Strange New Worlds.
Yeah, that's actually a really great show. It's a lot of fun so far. Even only seen the first episode, mm-hmm. but it's super enjoyable.
Yeah, but they have been talking since 2016. This is J.J. Abrams, the folks who relaunched Star Trek, the film series, back in 2009. And if you remember from the first film, they actually had Chris Hemsworth as Captain Kirk's dad, George. And they were kicking around a script whereby Chris Pine's Captain Kirk would go on a time travel-based adventure with his dad, George, with Chris Hemsworth coming back to play that role. And for whatever reason, they couldn't land on a script that they liked. And evidently, there were also some salary-related issues, so it got taken.
No, wait, that was for the next movie, right? Not a TV series.
Yes, the next
movie.
Okay.
Yep, okay, carry on. Sorry.
All right. Where this gets interesting is that just earlier this year, Paramount announced, okay, we want to do another theatrical release, in addition to all these Star Trek-related series, you know, Lower Decks and Picard and the like that they're doing over on Paramount Plus. And Chris Pine actually met with the new director of the film, Matt Shackman, and said, hey, super cool guy, very smart, like him a lot. On the heels of what Marvel is doing, Paramount is evidently back to the, you know, Kirk meets his dad in a time travel adventure, but they've added one extra Kirk to the pile, and that's supposed to be William Shatner?
Whoa, wait a minute. Are they puppeteering him? Are they digitally animating him? Or are they actually filming the dude?
You saw The Mandalorian of the Book of Boba Fett, right? Where they brought yep. back Luke.
Oh, no. Oh, no.
Yeah.
Wait a minute.
Yeah.
Wow.
So supposedly that's the idea, that William Shatner would do the vocal work and would appear on set to help with some of the physicality, but they would then hire a much younger actor.
Like a body double with a near face that they can digitally take, you know, swap out noses and lips real quick.
There we go. So, but again, wow. This is all Paramount wanting to get into the Marvel business.
Hey, you know what, though? I tell you, you've seen stuff on YouTube about the Tom Cruise deepfakes where it's like some guy at home by himself spent, you know, an entire week and he's got this video that looks exactly like Tom Cruise. Well, if that guy can do it, why can't a team of professionals whoop that together? Sure, I'm with you. Okay.
Okay. So, but again, we're kind of back to where we were in 2016. Evidently, everybody's like, that's interesting. Show me a script and then show me a pile of money. I think William, in particular, is show me the pile of money. So, you know, just sort of tuck that in the back of your mind, folks, that could be coming to a theater near you in a year or two. But again, that's Paramount looking to get into how do we do cool cameos? How do we bring together the sorts of things that fans want to see? Which brings us to Multiverse of Madness. So I got to say right off the bat, I thoroughly enjoyed the sequel. I love the economy of the thing. I love how it literally starts with Defender Strange in America on the run from one of Wanda's beasts. And
it starts at a sprint.
That's exactly. And by the way, as I understand it, we get to meet 4 Doctor Stranges in this thing. We get, you know, the Doctor Strange we met from the first film in 2016, and Defender Strange, which we meet right as this thing is getting started.
There's the one that failed, that the Illuminati took out.
Which supposedly is third. Supreme Strange. He was the Sorcerer Supreme in his world. And then there was Sinister Strange, the one in the world that was sort of collapsing in on itself because of the incursion.
Oh, yeah, right. Yeah, with the third eye.
All right, so.
And by the way, for Benedict Cumberbatch is going, mm-hmm. eat your heart out there, Oscar Isaac. You played only 2 characters. Well, a glimpse of a third in the last one. I played four. No. Four. No. Beautiful, lovely characters. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No. That's a cool point. And by the way, as long as we're toting up, collect them, trade them with friends. Also got to meet in the What If episode. That was the Sinister Supreme Strange, the Sorcerer Supreme who went sinister.
So that would be a fifth variation.
A fifth variation.
Okay, very good. I want to make sure that it wasn't, because they did actually do, when they jumped through their little portal, there was an animated version of them for a brief second.
You're right.
And I wondered if that, and then I was like, no, because he's locked in a cube somewhere. So that means that there's at least two animated versions of the MCU out there somewhere. But I want to very much get the home video version so I can pause it frame by frame and see the many jumps that they make in that one sequence. Because it seems like you go through 20 places in 20 seconds, and it's blink, 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 done. Oh, what? Oh, I missed it. Yeah. Damn it.
No, it was amazing. It was amazing.
Yeah, but it was really great.
Okay, so we now jump to the scene at the wedding with Dr. Nick West, Michael Strobog from the first Doctor Strange movie, who is clearly not right in the head after the snap. And, like, you know, I love it. I lost my two cats. Oh yeah, and my brother. But at the same time, I didn't expect that turn in that bit of dialogue, you know, him questioning Strange about his choices.
Is there any other way? Yeah.
Yeah. And were there any other choices? And then the stiletto at the end, you know, greatest sorcerer in the world, superhero, still didn't get the girl.
Yep.
Oh, I mean, and then the rueful talk at the bar with Christine. Her comment about, you know, you had to be the one holding the knife, holding the scalpel, and him, how long you had that one in the barrel? You know, I mean,
quite a while, yeah. These scenes, and I just want to talk about the structure of the movie for a quick second here, because, like, if we would have started off without the chase in the beginning, that first 2 or 3 minutes of adrenaline, we would have thought this was a very slow to start movie, because we're starting off with dialogue. And then at the end of the wedding scene, it goes back into an action scene, right? But that start of sprinting right off the bat, I was taken by surprise by that as being the opening. Mm-hmm. I was expecting a slow, you know, maybe a voiceover of previously we did this and the results were this and now I have to deal with this. Mm-hmm. And now you're up to speed and we're at present day where he's walking down the street and something happens. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden, the screen, you know, the logo plays, the Marvel logo plays, and they're sprinting, and action, and then slow for about 5 to 7 minutes, where you get a lot of exposition and setup for things to come later, and then back to action. And if it weren't for that thoughtful structure of action up front, it would have been a slow to start movie, and I would have been like, man, this is starting off boring. First 10 minutes, nothing's happened.
No, that's an excellent point. I mean, it is incredibly well constructed. I mean, the economy, you know, the whole notion of, we see the monster in the street, we see Wong and Strange save America, but the interesting thing is we have seen Defender Strange start to grab America's powers, and you know, so she doesn't trust him, at least initially, and so, you know, they take her to Kamar-Taj for safety, and Strange goes off to meet with Wanda to recruit her help. And I gotta say, I have seen that trope before. I didn't.
the information given that you shouldn't have.
Yeah.
That indicates that you are the criminal, the perpetrator of said events. Yeah. I've seen it done many, many times as well before. Mm-hmm. And the way that they acknowledged it, the way that they handled it, immediately, you know, like she goes, you didn't tell me that. And he's like, nope. And it's like, okay, they're in on the gag as well.
Yeah.
And it's efficient. It's cut very, to the bone.
Very. Yeah. By the way, I also have to say, I honestly love how this movie plugs straight into WandaVision. I mean, think about it. The very last time we saw Wanda, was it an end credit shot, I want to say, where, you know, the camera goes.
She's in the cabin and she hears the echo of her kids.
Yeah. She's studying the Darkhold. And when we meet her now, she's in the thrall of the Darkhold. And all she wants is a way back to her boys, Billy and Tommy. And, you know, I'm not a monster. I'm a mother. And it's just sort of like, I think on the last show, you were talking a little bit about the Universal Monsters. And, you have sympathy for the monsters.
Yeah, you understand them. You're on their side the whole time, rooting for them.
Yeah, and so yeah. Wanda, right from the get-go, it's like, well, yeah, I just saw her in WandaVision, and yes, you know, she lost her husband, and she had kids for a short time, and then it all came collapsing down on her. So I get what her I want is. You know, I want a way to get to my kids.
I want to add on to this point here that you're currently on, mm-hmm. before we move off of it, that I mentioned earlier there are some young kids, and I don't think it's a scary movie. I think it could be spooky from time to time, mm-hmm. but the people that I would actually give some small inkling of warning to, mm-hmm. For one solid reason, is a parent that may have actually lost a child in some tragic way. I would warn that person, you may not want to watch this movie if that is a wound that still, mm-hmm. triggers emotions in you. You might want to avoid this, because this is about a parent, mm-hmm. who lost children, who would do anything in the world to get them back. And that can be very, very relatable, you know, yeah. in those extents. And I feel for Wanda. I had all the feels for her motivation. Mm-hmm. But, you know, when she ends up confronting another version of herself, it's just like that mother, mm-hmm. loves those children just the same.
Yep.
And that's, God, that was a strong emotional moment.
Oh, it was.
Where it's like, yeah. I think if I wouldn't warn a parent with young kids, you know, do I have to worry about taking my kids? They're fine. They're not going to be scarred. Hmm. Should I take my friend who just recently lost a child due to some horrible accident? No, don't take them.
No.
Do not take them to this movie. It's not a subject matter that they need in their moment right now.
Absolutely.
So,
absolutely.
And that's a very small pool of people, but it could ruin, you know, it could change your friend from having a good night to having a horrible night choose that evening.
That's an excellent insight, and please take it into consideration. But I also have to say, if this is an example of how stories going forward here, you know, in the MCU are going to slide back and forth between theatrical releases and limited series, I'm all in. They move so assuredly with this. In fact, I would argue there's nothing in this movie that set up that doesn't pay off. I mean, even the whole Wong thing, you know, it's customary to bow to the Sorcerer Supreme and keep that going as a gag, and then, but still use it as a grace note at the very end of the movie. And just nailing home the notion that as scary as the Scarlet Witch is, Wanda is a grieving mom. By the way, let's talk about her exit.
Well, it's not an exit, because we know that she's signed for the next 7 years of her natural life. So the only way that she gets out of this is if she actually physically exits this world. And she ain't doing that anytime soon. Therefore, she's still under contract, and we'll see her again.
Okay.
How and why, I have no idea.
Well, it's so funny you said that, because I have a quote I pulled from the Collider article where Elizabeth talked about her future as a Scarlet Witch. And she said, look, I sign extensions every time they want me to do a movie. It's always adjusting to me. I don't think of this as the end.
Right.
So yeah, Red Flash. I don't know. You know, the
she'll come back as a much thinner version after having the entire Citadel collapse on her. I'm sure something.
There we go.
So there's a few things that I did want to cover. There's one. Mm-hmm. Oh boy, Jim. There's a conundrum afoot, and I don't know how many people have caught it yet.
Okay.
I'm kind of afraid to bring it up, because mm-hmm. people might label me a nerd.
Mm-hmm. Shock.
All right, here we go. Okay. This is what I call the Ultron Vision Kids Conundrum.
Mm-hmm.
We're in, what, Universe 838 or something like that, when we meet the Illuminati, mm-hmm. and such. Doctor Strange is brought in by functioning Ultrons.
Mm-hmm.
So if you have functioning Ultrons in this universe, you cannot have a Vision in this universe, because in order to have a Vision, you have to have an Ultron gone rogue and then make a thing get stopped halfway, and then have Thor finish the voltage mm-hmm. off or whatever to charge up.
Mm-hmm.
And then we have a Vision. And that didn't happen in that world, because we got functioning Ultrons. Mm-hmm. So no Vision. No Vision, no kids with Wanda in that universe. Therefore, mom cannot exist in that universe with kids. I'm sorry. I have ruined this for everybody. I just thought it should be brought up relatively early, so we can get that out of the way.
Wow, right. That is definitely a plot hole one could drive a truck through
Yeah, we'll move on. We'll move on to happier notes. Okay. Happier notes.
Again, it's Indiana Jones lashing himself to the sub, because subs never submerge, all right?
Right, yeah, no, they stay up the whole way as they're meant to.
There we go.
The cameo, we got to mention Bruce Campbell real quickly. The reference, for those that don't know what it is stop hitting yourself. Stop hitting yourself. That kind of joke.
Yeah.
Jim, that came back from the very first movie, was it? With Sam. So that's a deep cut callback going back to their first collaboration of Evil Dead, where he had to fight his own hand. Fortunately, he didn't have to cut it off this time.
Yeah.
And the end credit shot, super spoiler, when he finally gets done punching himself and he goes, "It's finally over." And then it cuts away to black. That's a great gag.
No, it's a great, but again, it's just, I so love their collaboration. I so love their friendship. And the fact that, again, I was just watching the Return to Oz Oz the Great and Powerful. And he also managed to get Bruce Campbell beaten up in that film as well. I mean, he really loves pounding on Bruce.
Well, sure. That's a fun to do. He's got a chin for taking a punch. He's got that massive chin.
And while we're talking about Evil Dead, what did you think of, remember when the Strange resurrects Defender Strange and sends him...
No, wait, hold on. Before that,
okay,
because you mentioned the Evil Dead reference, and I know where you're going with the zombie thing.
Okay,
but I'm gonna back up before you get to the zombie.
Okay,
the camera movement, because Sam Raimi's got some signature things that he does. Yeah. But there is a spot where Wanda 838 is at home with her children, and the camera is lurking behind the banister of the stairs, and it's kind of peeking around, and Wanda almost notices in it, and it lurches back. Mm-hmm. Using the camera point of view as like a sinister entity or monster is the thing that he did in Evil Dead, where it raced across the ground. That was the evil coming into, racing to the cabin to get him, right? So that is a Sam Raimi gag. That's one of his signature things, is using the camera as a perspective of the evil entity that has no form or body or shape, which is a great gag.
Well, there's also this thing that Sam does that I love. It's kind of a 30s montage thing where it's like the giant heads, like there'll be one head in one quarter of the frame and another head in the middle, or, and then that are off to the side. But it's all different characters doing things that will impact the plot the very next scene simultaneously.
Yeah.
By the way, we also need to mention Danny Elfman's amazing score for this thing.
By the way, Danny, I'll never work with that son of a bitch ever again, Elfman.
Yeah.
He did that once with Sam. Yeah. I'm glad they patched it up. That was all because he had gotten so happy with some temp music for Spider-Man 3. Sam Raimi did. And Danny Elfman's like, "You got to pull that. I write this beautiful, wonderful." And Sam's like, no, this is great. And man, they fought over it and ruined a friendship. I'll never work with that son of a bitch again. And then they patched it up. I'm so happy.
Yeah. All right. Well, back to Mr. Raimi. And again, the scene where zombie Defender Strange is trying to get to the Citadel to help, to save America. And he's then the demons that, again, you're Abomination. We're going to pull you down to hell. And it's like, tell me that those weren't the most Sam Raimi demons.
Oh, sure. Oh, yeah. There was a moment, when the girl who was part of the magic group, I don't remember their specific name, but she stabbed the book and she immediately burned to cinders and whatever. And I was like, is this Drag Me to Hell? The ending of Drag Me to Hell? This looks a lot like that final shot. It's pretty crazy. Yeah, I mean, there are some fantastic... by the way, while you're talking about zombies, I have to bring this up. Yep. And I'm sorry, it's a nerd thing once again. I'm getting geek all over people this week. I'm sorry. You got to wear your tarps like a Gallagher show, apparently. when we're talking about a zombie, I also had this problem in Batman movie when they had Two-Face as a character. Mm-hmm. Same problem with Doctor Strange zombie, is he's missing the cheek, right? So you can't make a P sound. You can't do a plosive, because your air leaks out of the hole out of the side of your face. So his dialogue should sound like this.
"Hey, America Chavez, we really got to start around this, because this is really bad, okay? I mean, this is super, super bad. And we got to do something really quick. Otherwise, the whole world gonna end.
That's how it should sound when you're missing half your face.
Once again, this is why I do the show with this man, folks.
Kind of notes just for sound designers.
There we go. There we go. All right.
All right. A couple. Do you have any more points that I got?
Please continue.
The thing I truly love the most is when Doctor Strange was fighting the Doctor Strange in the universe that was colliding and coming to an end, and they were using sheet music and the musical score of their blasts.
That was an interesting, a genuinely different battle. Yeah.
Yeah. No, we saw Gandalf go against, you know, his nemesis where they would swing their staff in the air and the other person would kind of float away and go, "Arg, you hit me. 2 points against my battleship." And this was, you know, you got to keep it visually interesting. You can't just let Doctor Strange be a couple of circle shields around his hands. You got to do something that's fun and visually bold. And when he grabbed the sheet music and he started flinging the notes, and then the other Doctor Strange created a staff to capture the notes and put them on it and then blast a musical chord back at him. There was so much stupid fun in that, 20 seconds of battle. As a sound guy, I was just drooling all over myself. Like, if I ever had a job to do that, I would consider it the peak of my career, that moment right there. That was freaking artistry, and I applaud whoever worked on it. Genius, genius, genius. And on a smaller note of audio, well, we haven't really talked about the third eye a whole lot, but when it opens, there's a screaming guitar. It's almost like Wayne's World. It's just this screaming Yngwie Malmsteen guitar type thing that happens.
I did not notice that. Now I'll have to go. Well, I was going to go back anyway, you know, I enjoyed it that much. I mean, and again, just economy, confident, even the mid-credit scene, you know, just walking down the street and Charlie Theron says, "Dr. Strange, there's an incursion. Come with me." You know,
do you want to mention who Charlize is playing?
Well, yes, please. Clea, is that?
Yes.
Okay.
And then she ends up becoming the wife of Dr. Strange. They end up getting hitched at some point down the road, is why people care about Clea. As this is the introduction of his bride-to-be, if things go well, in the 616, that is.
I would assume, given that we are $500 million in, and we haven't officially done 7 days at the box office, I would say that Charlize can maybe start clearing her schedule.
Well, I mean, was it Mara Jade? Wasn't that Luke Skywalker's wife? But she started off as hunting him. Oh, they were nemeses.
That's true.
And then they fell in love through their battles. And then they became united. So it could be one of those things where they, you know, they're antagonists. You kind of like Moonlighting, you know, where Cybill Shepherd doesn't get along with Bruce Willis and they kind of fight, but that's kind of hot.
All right.
I'm going way too back on that. All right, let's wrap up the show.
Okay. look, I just have to say, on the heels of Moon Knight, I and given how good Multiverse of Madness was, just remember, in 4 weeks' time, we get Ms. Marvel debuting on Disney Plus. I have to say now that I am putting Kevin Feige in the category where if this man calls me at 3 o'clock in the morning and says, "Hey, I need a ride to the airport. I am literally, hang on, let me go get my car keys." They have delivered so much consistently high quality, entertaining stuff that, I've been giving him money, you know, the Marvel Studios money for movie tickets and DVDs and Blu-rays, but I'm in the red here. I owe this guy. I owe it. So seriously, if Kevin, you need somebody to move your barbells up to the attic, you know who to call. I mean, Sam Raimi is now directing MCU movies.
And well, I mean, like I said before, like the structure, part of the brilliance of this is, you know, over the last 10 years, he's been teaching us a language that's called Marvel. Yeah. And we can hit the ground running in a Doctor Strange 2 movie. By the way, when I was 20 years old, I never thought Doctor Strange could have a cool movie. Let's start there. Okay. They did that the first outing. I was surprised. I didn't think they could have a Doctor Strange movie be cooler than the one that they had, and they did. And I was like, oh, wow, this is actually much, much, much better than the first one. And that's usually pretty rare with a sequel.
I agree. And just let's end this on I love to share information like this. So Benedict Cumberbatch is out there doing interviews for Multiverse of Madness, and the folks at Total Film ask him, so we saw Doctor Strange will return. Are you returning? And he's like, I'm not tired of it at all yet. You know, I really enjoy playing this character, and I've still got a lot left to give as him and a lot more adventures I want to have with him. So
the money's been really good. That's usually a thing that we don't talk about, but is usually there present.
Yeah. Checks can't hurt. Cherry on the Sunday this past week, they had the penultimate episode of Amphibia on Disney Channel, and they slipped in a sneak preview of Marvel's new animated series, Moon Girl and Devil Dinosaur, and that looked great too. So it's like a really good time to be a Marvel fan. Life is good. So that's going to do it for this week's show, folks. Aaron, can you tell the nice folks where they can find you on social media? Because, by the way, I did not need to see that Spider-Man video you shared. There are certain things
went bad, huh?
You cannot unsee, and it was like,
no, you can't. But it was so funny. It's shockingly funny.
In a wood chipper sort of way. Yes, but please.
Yeah, very much in a wood chipper sort of way, right? Okay, yeah. So. If you would like to see the gruesomeness, mm-hmm. You can follow me on Twitter at Azaprop. By the way, I don't mean to hijack the show real quick. Mm-hmm. I need to, because everyone does listen. I know that, you know, Feige listens. I know Jeff Bezos listens. Oddly enough. Mm-hmm. And I just need to tell him for a quick second, if you don't mind, Jeff, I needed a replacement toilet seat. I'm not refurnishing a freaking hotel. You can quit showing me ads. Okay. I bought it. It's fixed. I don't need 30 other varieties, and I don't need it in pink or chartreuse or wood or ceramic. So you can stop.
I know of what you speak. I don't understand why Pottery Barn feels the need to reach out to me 5 times a day.
Have you purchased any pottery today? I, you know, you could purchase some pottery today, but have you gotten pottery for your wife? Your wife likes pottery.
Yes.
Children love pottery.
Yeah.
Have you broken pottery? You need to replace your pottery?
I don't get it. It's like literally 5 times a day. It's like, you know, you would think the first 2,500 times I didn't click in your ad, okay, maybe we can get back. No, more. He needs to see more pottery.
They hear you talk about going to Target all the time. They're jealous.
Oh, there we go. There we go.
All right. Hey, by the way, where can they find you on the social medias, Jim?
Well, they can find me on Twitter and Instagram as Jim Hill Media, and over on Facebook as Jim Hill Media News. Beyond that, folks, if you could do Aaron and I a favor, if you could head over to Apple Podcasts and rate and recommend the show you're listening to right now, A Marvelous Disney. By the way, I should also mention, we have a couple of other podcasts here. We've got Disney Dish that I do with Len Testa. We have A Fine Tuning that I do with Drew Taylor. And we even have the recently revived Looking at Lucasfilm, which I do with Brian Kong. In fact, we'll be recording a brand new episode of that this weekend. But beyond that, again, I'm a happy guy. I got a Moon Knight. I got a Multiverse of Madness, and I got a Ms. Marvel. That's a lot of M's. But I'm happy.